Oh, guys, I want to tell you a couple stories, and then and I want to try to collate. Maybe you can see why these guys are praying for me. And it's just one of those times when it seems like everything's going wrong, you know? I mean, just the little stuff. And that's why you sometimes feel guilty about whining about little things. This summer, you know, we left and went and spent the whole summer in Europe hosting teams, okay? No whine about that. That was amazing. That was incredible. But about a year ago, I started bugging my wife about us selling our house and moving closer into town. I just felt like that's what God was doing. She said, no, I learned a lesson a long time ago that the house deal is she's going to, that's God's will, whatever she says, okay, on that thing, all right? So I started praying. About 6 months later, she came back and said, okay, God said, let's do that. So we put the house up, take off June 7th. June 10th or 11th, we get a phone call and said, you just sold your house, and you have to be out July 31st. Well, we were coming back July 26th, so that made it for some, you know, a expeditious move, if you would like to use the term or draw the picture with it. So that all happened. So we did that. We got out. We found a rent house about 3 days before we were had to be out. We moved everything over there, sold our house, and began to, you know, hang around there. Things kind of slowed down. It was a good pace. And then we found another house that we were going to completely remodel. And we started that venture about a month ago. And I have been in an emotional turmoil ever since. And we worked with great people, from the realtors to the painters to the people doing the remodel. Everything like that relationally was great. It was just all the little stuff that can go wrong. I bought a toilet seat, okay? I bring the toilet seat home, and it doesn't have the threaded part that receives the bolt from underneath. Okay, so I take it back. I get another toilet seat. I bring it home. The bolt's not threaded, you know? I mean, and that just kept going. I get a phone call one night while I'm in the Home Depot, right? Now, what I have to tell you is 3 days before that, I had bought tile, but they said it couldn't get in, so I asked them to Carolyn to go by and see when it was going to get in. She said, well, I didn't order your tile. And the guy said, well, I need to start laying it tomorrow. So we go in, we go to another place, get some other tile, have it brought out there. So this night I'm in the Home Depot walking through. I see the lady who I thought had ordered my tile. She says, oh, you came to order your tile. No, I had to get it someplace else, but, you know, I needed it faster. And, oh, I'm sorry. Well, it's been great working with you. 5 minutes later, I'm in the Home Depot and my phone starts ringing. I pull it out and it's the front desk and they said, Mr. Helker, your tile's here. I mean, and it just began, if I weren't such an emotional knot, it would have been funny. I mean, it really would have been the things they just kept on going and going and going. We had a vanity that my little girl had put together. It was one of those ones that you put in this, and it had three screws on this side and two screws on this side. So we got it all put together, and the sink was leaning down like that. And it was, and we just kept seeing event like that after event. I hung a door upside down and backwards. Okay. Now, you know that you've gone, that you're in just a knot, that your emotions are in a knot when you start telling a screw that you're trying to put in a wall where it can spend eternity, okay? Now, what I have to tell you is, about a year and a half ago, before this, when I started getting these inklings about moving, and before I even mentioned it to my wife, God spoke something to me, and he said, Eddie, I haven't gifted you in those areas. He was walking with me through some areas of discipline, and he said, you don't need to worry about discipline in the area of frugality. And if you walk in, if we do this deal, and if you remodel, because that's what I'd want to do, was completely remodel a house, I'm going to either give you enough money to pay the proper people who are professionals in this to do it, or we won't do it. And it was really that specific. It was almost that, pointed. Well, you got to understand, And that's why I want to talk to you today about obedience and the little things. I have a besetting sin, and it's task accomplishment, okay? And I have to get something done. I mean, I cannot get my mind off of it. If I need something to be done, it's just like that's all I have. That's all I want to do. I can't see anything else. I've got this task. I've got to accomplish it. So you can only imagine, you know, if I didn't do what the Lord says and I start taking on some of these little tasks around the house, and if you're completely remodeling, you only can imagine how many tasks there are to be done. That you just fixate. So all day long for 3 or 4 weeks, I was just fixated, just walking like this with just these blinders on about what I needed to do. What could I take care of? What was next in my agenda? What did I have on the list that I needed to, oh, I need to call my wife and ask her about this. I need to call, you know, the guy that's doing the remodel about this. I mean, it's almost like I mean, for me, it's a drug. You know, it's funny, but it's a drug for me and task. I don't know if you're like that. But that's what I had to go about doing. I just had to get them out of the way. I couldn't think about anything else. I get up, spend time with the Lord. And the only place I could go that I even could hear God in was Ecclesiastes, because he kept saying, vanity of vanities, everything's vanity. And I'm not kidding. That's the place where I had to spend 3 weeks with God. Because it really was. It kept reminding me of what mattered and what didn't. Now, I want to take you back a few thousand years ago into a story of somebody else who just wasn't obedient in the small things. And what happened? You know that the tribe of Israel had really wanted a king. I mean, they looked all around them and they thought, all these other people have kings, we don't. And God kept saying to them through the prophets, look, I'm your king. I'm your God. I'm your leader. I'll give you people. I'll give you judges. I'll give you prophets. I'll send people to you, but you don't have to have a king. And they kept pressing him, and they kept pressing, and they kept pressing. And finally, Samuel came to him one day and said, okay, we've got one. See that great, big, really good-looking man back there? See that guy named Saul? He's your king. Let's usher him in. So he takes him and he anoints him. The one person that you would have said, that guy looks like a king, is who they chose, is who God had picked out for them. And there was great rejoicing, and they were like, yeah, now we can go forth as a people. We can do this thing. So he gets them together. Saul asks all of his tribe to come together, and he chooses this army. And their first task is to go out after the Amalekites. He sends them out after King Agag and the Amalekites, who had completely tried to wipe them out. I mean, they were just the bully of this region. They had been just the way that they had treated, I mean, like slaves they had treated these Israelite people. But now they had a king, and he gathered them together. And Saul was told by Samuel, he said, look, when you go do this, I want you to wipe them completely out. Every man, woman, child, every animal, get rid of every one of them. Now, there's probably lots of reasons for that I don't want to go into, which when I tell my kids that story, they kind of got off and, you mean he killed all the fish and the cows and the little kids? Well, he killed them all. That's what he was told to do. So they send them off to take care of this task. And sure enough, they win the battle. I mean, they're able to wipe them completely out. This people that had been at best derogatory and mean-spirited, at worst, they were on a mission to just completely annihilate the Israelites. And God gave them the victory through this King Saul. And they come back into the town. And Samuel arrives there. And he gathers King Saul in front of him, and he says, you've been disobedient to God. And he says, well, look around, look what we've done. We've united the people. We've won this great victory. This people that was going to try to overcome us, look what we've done here. He said, what were you asked to do? And he said, I was asked to go and wipe them out, and I've done that. And he said, then why do I hear these sheep in the back What is that? And Saul, I'm sure, hesitated. But the scriptures say it's at that point that he says, but I brought those forth, the people gathered them together for a sacrifice to God. We didn't want to just wipe them out. We didn't want to do all that. We owe God something. We brought back the best of their animals here so that we could sacrifice them. Oh yeah, and we brought back that king, that Agag guy that has been such a hideous person to us. And it's at that point that Samuel looked at Saul and said, to obey is better than sacrifice. And to heed God is better than anything that you could have ever given him. It's at that point that Saul said, okay, I've messed up. I didn't do what he said. You know what, guys? Why is it that it's the little things that tear us up? Why is it that it's these smaller things that kind of come back at us and haunt us and are the things that can get us completely off of our focus? So much so that we'd give our time and our energy and our life to it. I just have a few questions, maybe even some comments, maybe some conclusions even about them. You see, I can't figure out why here was this Saul guy who basically just made this little faux pas. I mean, he didn't do much different. He really, you know, at least he had a good religious excuse for it. And then the next king that comes after him, David, winds up taking one of his best warriors' wife from him, sends him out to battle and has him killed so that he can marry her after he slept with her and impregnated her. And yet, God rips the kingdom from Saul, and then he blesses David and gives it to him. Lets his lineage continue on. That so much so that our Savior Jesus would come from that lineage. Why is that? Why is it that would be allowed? I mean, I would think that there was this big deal that happened over here. You know, that seems to be a whole lot, heck of a lot bigger deal than just not doing this little thing that he said to do over here, wipe them out. Doesn't that seem like if we're going to weigh them out? But you know what I've noticed about the scriptures is that the little things really, really matter to God. So much so that I guess it's because he sees all of it. And the little stuff starts adding up. Look with me, if you will, at the book of James. In the midst of this move, I've lost my Bible, and thus I've had to use this thing that I can't hardly even read the words from. I like this translation, but I absolutely don't know if I can even see the letters in it. Okay. James 1, 14. Now watch the progression from the little things to the big stuff. But each one is tempted when he's drawn away by his own desires, and he's enticed. I mean, here's this little desire, and I'm drawn away, and I'm enticed. And then when the desire has been conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is fully brought forth, brings forth death. Do you see how the little stuff begins to add up? I think God in his economy sees it all, and thus the little things matter. You know what he says in James 3, a couple verses later? He begins to talk about the tongue and how a little flame, a little flicker, a little spark can set to fire to the great expanse of the forest. Just a little bitty thing. I think back through of the times I've seen, heard of shootings or something that started off from one word being said to another. You see, I believe that God sees the expanse of it. That's why the little stuff matters to him. That's why when he saw this man, Saul's heart, he didn't make excuses for it and immediately ripped the kingdom from him. Saul found no value in these little things. I think the small stuff also sets a seed in the next generation. I had a thought the other day because of this task accomplishment, and I have to get so many tasks done that I wind up being late for the next task, and thus when all the anger comes out, it's when I get behind the wheel of a car. Correct? I needed four more tasks. I had to get that one done. Surely I can get that done in 3 minutes, and it took 6 minutes because I hung it upside down and backwards. And so I get in the car, and I'm in much more of a hurry, and I get in, and I take off driving, and I got one of my little ones in the back with me, right? Well, I get them there, and that turned yellow. I probably ought to stop, but no. And then I think, I wonder what happens the next generation if my child sets that in him and he's just 1 second later. You see how it gets set into our hearts. And thus the little stuff really, really matters. I think it also is in the little things is where we think we can be God. You know? I mean, you know, we walk through situations, hopefully not all of us, but some of us in our congregation, where there's a really big thing, like a child that's sick or something. And we know we've got to be dependent upon God. I mean, we can't heal him or her. We just can't do it. I've got to call out to God on the big deal. But you know what? There's so many of these little things that I can just take care of. I don't need you, God, here. Let me run it here. I'll take care of this one. You sit on the side and you take the big stuff. I can do these little deals. I'm not so sure that that's not the place where we show most of our sin. It's when it comes to the day-to-day little things that we think we can take care of. I'm so thankful to the Lord that at least he's pointed out my weaknesses to me. I related to you guys the dream I had of two different affairs and those, you know, and I woke up so scared thinking, what have I done, you know, and confessed those in the dream, woke up and God had said to me 2 weeks later, your lovers are task accomplishment and competition. And since that time, at least I'm able to readily find these places. For so long, I just kind of wandered around, you know. I'd wind up being in these situations and just wondered, well, what's going on? Why can't I hear God? And those blinders were on. At least now I know what this blinder is called and this blinder is called. And God has been able to point them out. And he's been able to more quickly put people into my life that hold me accountable and ask me to walk in a discipline. Last week, you know, I know that's why Jeremy was praying. Tom and Bob and some others had gathered and said, Eddie, what's wrong? And I said, guys, I need to talk with you guys. And I confessed that to him. And guys, you know, you feel so guilty when you're bringing up something like that. I mean, you know, this is remodeling a house. You're getting to take care of. You're just like, oh, God, why do I have to confess this? I'm so stupid, and this is so childish, and I'm so sorry. But you're still in that place, and those blinders are there, and you're still fixated. And so I had to ask these guys to come around and said, you know what, guys, can you pray? Because I really don't want to live this way. I really don't want to fixate on this. And I told him, I said, you know what, I was looking, I was down in my office and I looked over and I saw a picture of Hannah and Evan, my two oldest, sitting on my back when they were 3 and 4. And I said, I just broke. I just thought, you know what, I missed a whole month of their life because I've been fixated right here. I don't want to do that. I woke up this morning and looked over at my wife and, you know, her and I both are getting more wrinkles around our eyes and I don't want to miss this time together. I'm in trouble. Not as much as Anna was the other day about Jordan's deal, but I'm in trouble. And I said, guys, I don't want to miss this. I don't want to miss this time. Can you pray? And I just began to feel the release and began to see God walk us out of some of that. It also was, you know, the job was getting done. I was able to go home and hang out with the kids and, you know, and just I mean, by God's grace, you know, not doing things until they'd gone to sleep and all of that stuff. I know, just a confession here. And then I got a chance to go up and see Mike and Debbie and Chris and everybody up in Jackson Hole, which they send their greetings and their love. And it was just like the leaf had turned over. I mean, just everything that could go right could go right. I got this room that was at the base of the mountain for the same price that I would have gotten in the city. And we walked up there and saw these moose down in, and it was just like down in this river. And it was just like everything. It was just this flow. And you're just like, oh, yeah. You know, what a deal, God. Yeah, I got every plane connection, you know, in and out. It was beautiful weather. It was 65 degrees every day, and the sun was shining. I got the last of the aspens turning. I thought, this is so incredible. And I, you know, every once in a while I'd call home and say, hey, Carolyn, you know, everything going well. Don't tell me all the details. I don't want to try to fixate here. But you know, it was fine. So I got home, and I knew they'd completed the kitchen, and I was so, it was just like this flow, you know. I actually got out of Will Rogers Airport quickly, you know. So I start up there, and I walk in, and I flick on the, I thought, I'm going to go see the kids first, and I, you know, see them and talk to them. And then I went down to the kitchen to see what had happened. No lie, I turned on the switch to see how much, you know, what we'd accomplished. I turned on the switch, and pop, pop, two lights blow out right there, so I can't even see into the place. But that's the way, you know, that's what happens, guys. It's just the brokenness that these things happen to us. We live in a broken world. So I began to ask God, how do I walk back in this with you? I mean, this has been a tough time. And in the midst of this, of that, I told you that I was in Ecclesiastes. He took me to this passage in Ecclesiastes 3. I'm going to read from 9 to 14 here. Listen to what he says. What profit was the worker from which he labors? I've seen the God-given task in which the sons of men are to be occupied. He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find out the work that God has from the beginning to end. Isn't that a funny little statement he makes? He puts eternity in our hearts, but you're never going to figure it out, is what he's saying to us. I'm way too good and way too mystical for you to figure out all of this stuff. But just know it's there, and just know I'm with you. I know that nothing is better for them than to rejoice and to do good in their lives, and also that every man should eat, drink, and enjoy the good of his labor and the gift of God. I know that whatever God does, it shall be forever. Nothing can be added to it, nothing can be taken away from it. God does it that men should fear before him. You know, I used to think that that was such a dumb little statement to people to tell you just to enjoy it. How do you enjoy it? I'm fixated. Don't tell me to enjoy it. Enjoy the journey, Eddie. No, I got to get it done. I got to get to the end of it. There's another journey. I got to get on that journey. Enjoy it. It's not going to get any better than this, son. Enjoy it. Enjoy the fruits of your labor. I read this and I hear, and it's almost like, what is this guy saying? He's saying vanity of vanities, and then he'll get to these little statements, these little nuggets that you're saying, yeah, I get it. It's really not so dumb, is it? We need to enjoy this journey. That's the statement from the catechism, that we were created to worship God and to enjoy Him forever. I asked you that question when we started. What was the difference in this Saul and David? I mean, David's the one that did this hideous crime. You know what I really believe when you read the heart of it? That David was God's and Saul wasn't. Saul was a man's man, and he didn't have a heart after God. God had picked out David. God had chosen him. He says he's a man after God's heart. Well, who put the heart in him to be after him? God. It's like that song that we sang right before offering or during offering. He never lets go. See, God just didn't let go of David. It wasn't about his sin or what he did or didn't do. It was about God working in him. It was about God's work in him. And Saul was probably never God's. Now, I'm not talking about his eternity. I don't mean that. I'm talking about his, I don't know about that stuff. I'm talking about his heart. Saul always was trying to impress God. Always had some sacrifice. Always going to do something else religious. And David, when he saw what he'd done, although it was much more hideous, if we're going to rank them compared to Saul's, broke down, and his statement was, punish me however you want, but don't take your spirit from me. Do whatever you want to me, but leave me you, please. Leave me you. And I don't know, guys, where your blinders are and what they are today. I hope they're small ones. I hope they're little ones. I hope that you feel as stupid as I do about complaining. But whatever they are, I hope that you're just God's. I hope you don't make excuses and try to do some type of sacrifice to get rid of them. The thing that God doesn't despise is a broken and a contrite heart. He'll never despise those things. And that's the thing I don't think he ever saw in Saul. Saul was always going to do one more thing for him. He was always going to overcome one more people. And all these little deals just kept adding up and adding up and adding up. In fact, they didn't even add up for a long time. God just immediately snapped it out of him and said, you won't lead this people again. I've already found a man who will come after me. So I want to ask you today, during our ministry time, to just ask God the question, am I yours? And I want you to ask the question of, is there a bunch of little sacrifices you're trying to make to get rid of these blinders? Or is it just a matter of saying, God, I just want to obey. I want to obey the heart of the one who will never let me go. Whatever it might cost me or whatever it might be. And that's the real simple call that we want to gather around and pray. Maybe you're like me. You need to ask some people to come and pray because the blinders do not seem to be falling off. If God has called you, you have that same spirit, that same heart of David. He won't let you go. Be they big things or little things, in your opinion. He will not let you go. Father, I just ask you today I say thank you for showing me my blinders, Lord. And I just ask you today for joy. Lord, joy in this journey, joy in the fact that you're at work, joy that you won't let us go. These problems are never going to let go. They may turn into big ones. My son came to me almost a year ago and said, I had a dream that our house burned down February 7th, 2007. Well, that'd be a pretty big one. But you wouldn't let us go, God. Dead or alive, you won't let us go. Your spirit will not let us go. And I pray that that's who we would come to today. Dependent upon you with each other, however you want to use us. So I just ask that you'd come, Lord Jesus.